And then the plane circles and circles and circles. And every time they put the landing gear down, something happens.
As the plane's being tossed around, literally, I mean, tossed from, you know, one side to the other, up and down, every angle, your mind and your body begins to play tricks on you.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the Stoop Storytelling Series podcast. I'm Jessica Henkin.
And I'm Laura Wexler.
This week on the podcast, Close Calls, two stories about people who made the bad decision to fly with friends.
Oh, my God, these dummies. Okay. This first story is from a guy named Ronnie.
Shared it in a show. He was an audience storyteller, so we don't know too much about him.
All right. Take a listen.
I think about life and my life and how everything is kind of close calls. I was born in Phoenix, grew up in Irvine, California, and I've been in Baltimore for 15 years. And I think about, how am I here today? But I like funny stories, and I was probably 25. No, I was probably, probably about 25. I'm in college. I'm unemployed. Everything's kind of just fine. And a friend of mine calls me up and he says, I'm going to go buy this plane in Dayton, Ohio. Would you like to join me? I'm like, fuck yeah. I don't have any money. And he's like, just get the plane ticket. My dad and I are going to get this plane and you can stay with us. And I say, let's go. So we fly to Dayton, Ohio, and we go to this little small airport, and we get in this six-seater twin-engine Seneca plane. If you know what that is, I don't know. I didn't when I got there. And it had a little TV, and there were some movies, and he and his dad were going to fly this plane to Las Vegas, and I was going to sit in the back while they flew. So we test drive this plane, we sleep that night, they end up buying it, we wake up the next day, we get in this plane, and we start flying to St. Louis. We get to the St. Louis airport, and we're about to land, and then we don't. And then the plane circles and circles and circles, and every time they put the landing gear down, something happened. And they kept trying to figure it out and figure it out. And they're two pretty smart guys, and they had flown before. And we finally land. It's like, okay, I don't like this. They both snore like nothing you've ever heard before. And I'm in this hotel room on the floor while they're dead asleep, snoring as loud as you can imagine. We wake up. We take off. We end up somewhere else. I'm going to forget where that was. We land. I think it was Colorado Springs. Yeah, I think it was Colorado Springs. We land. We go play miniature golf. We hang out. We go to sleep. I don't sleep. They snore all night. We get back in this plane. They try to start it. It does not start. So we're waiting and we're... No, wait, no. That's the other story. That's the next place we land. So we take off from Colorado Springs. We're going over the mountains. I'm sitting in the back. They're pointing at gauges. They're talking to each other. And I'm sitting back here and I'm going, what the fuck is going on? And I go, Joey, what is happening? And he's like, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. I'm like, what is going on? And he says, we're losing oil pressure in one of the engines. And I say, cool, we can go back. Like, we've just started climbing. We can head back. And he's like, don't worry about it. We have two engines. One will get us there. So then we land in Lake Powell. And if you know the area, it's really unbelievably beautiful. And landing in that area is incredible. So we land. We sleep. One of the best jokes I've ever heard in my life. We're at this hotel. There's a bunch of older folks there, and it's a Bible study, and he says it's like a bunch of older people studying for their final. And I've never forgotten that joke. And I love, anyway. So we go to sleep, we wake back up, we get to this plane, and it won't start. So they jump start a plane, which I didn't even know there was an option to do that. So we finally get in the plane, it starts, we take off, we land in Las Vegas. We're there for a bachelor party, and I know a few people, and I run to some friends and say, "Can I ride home with you? I can't get back in that plane."
So I didn't, and clearly Ronnie didn't know that you could jump start a plane and that you could tow a plane. These would all be indications to me to not get on said plane.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I kept feeling like, Ronnie, take care of yourself. Like,
you have choices,
value
man.
Your life a little more.
Yeah, but you're young and you're
I wondered
dumb.
About his friend's dad.
Yeah.
I wondered if he was a trustworthy guy
of course
or not.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Wow. All yeah. right. Well, I was just, oh, good. Well, I'm glad Ronnie got there in one piece. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be back with another close call story. So Sean Adamick, at the time he shared this story, had just recently left his job as communications for Mayor O'Malley or Governor O'Malley.
Oh,
he worked,
right, yeah,
yeah. He's in communications. Take a listen.
When I was in high school, I worked at a movie theater. And through this movie theater, I met my friend Chris. And Chris was a couple of years older than me, and he was a bit of a nerd. He was always he was really into technology. He was kind of a computer geek. And so when I went to college, and worked my butt off to do what I do now, Chris was enjoying being a computer geek in the middle of the tech boom, and was doing very well. And his company went public, and Chris was in his early to mid-20s and a multimillionaire overnight on a good day worth $10 or $12 million. So, you know, as any young, single, multimillionaire overnight, you know, he needed somebody to help him spend his money, and I was going to be that friend. So so Chris and I enjoyed quite the life together when I was in college. At this point, the movie theater that I had worked at during high school was up for sale, and Chris bought it. And because Chris needed to keep his full-time job in order to bankroll the movie theater, he asked me, all of 20 years old, to be his business partner. And I ran the movie theater for him. And really, it amounted to being a place for us to have parties with our friends. We'd shut it down quite often. But nonetheless, that was our life, and we led this really extraordinary lifestyle together, young, single, and really rich. And another one of the toys that Chris bought was an airplane. Chris always wanted his pilot's license, and he got his pilot's license, and he bought this little Piper Cherokee, a single prop, small two-seater airplane. And Chris and I would, you know, he didn't need it for anything. Suppose you don't buy an airplane because you need one. So Chris and I would fly all over the place. At the time, we were living in Rhode Island, and we'd fly to Cape Cod for lunch, or to New Hampshire because fireworks were legal there, or any reason we would find to make this meaningless flight, we would. So one day, Chris asked me if I would join him to go to New York to have lunch with a business associate of his, and I. Of course, never, missing an opportunity for a free trip to Manhattan. I said yes, and off we went, flew into Long Island, took the train into New York, and had a very expensive lunch with his business associate, and he hung out at this very exclusive, cigar bar, and it eventually turned into a very expensive dinner, and eventually we found ourselves, it was 1 o'clock in the morning, and we were still there, and we needed to go home, and so we made our way, the train back to Long Island, and out to the plane, and by now it was about, quarter of two in the morning or so, pouring rain. And wind like crazy, very cold, really bad conditions to fly a tiny Piper Cherokee airplane home. So we decided that we would hinge our decision on whether or not to fly home on this weather report that you dial into on any airport. Sometimes it's a live person in a tower, sometimes it's a recording. But regardless, it's updated fairly frequently, and it tells you everything you need to know about the flying conditions for the night. And this is what we were going to make our decision based on, is how high the clouds were. Because in a small plane, in any plane, you know about the altitude you're going to fly at. So depending on the cloud ceiling, according to this weather report, you knew your risk of being in the clouds when you flew. Well, the cloud ceiling, according to this report, was at 5,000 feet, which is a pretty good height for a small Piper Cherokee because you fly well below that altitude. So our risk of being caught in these storm clouds was fairly low. So we decided to go. And by now, the rain was hail. And it was coming down. And there was, of course, the risk of ice on the wings. So Chris decided we would mitigate that risk by me, as the non-pilot, shining a flashlight onto the wings occasionally to check for ice forming on the wings of the plane. Because any ice on the wings of a plane could, you know, be very dangerous. And we hadn't quite figured out what we would do if we found the ice on the wings of the plane. Luckily, we never had to find out. Off we went, and flying, 1,000, 1,200, 1,300 feet, climbing 1,500 feet, and we're in the clouds. The weather service that we had dialed into, that we had hinged our decision on whether to fly home or not, was wrong. It was dead wrong. And as the plane is being violently tossed around in these storm clouds, we've realized we've made a very bad decision. And if you can picture for a second complete darkness when you're in these clouds, you not only don't have the lights on the ground to serve as a benchmark for your flying, you don't have the moonlight above you either. There is no light whatsoever. Your depth perception is totally gone. And this becomes very dangerous because as the plane's being tossed around, literally, I mean, tossed from, one side to the other, up and down, every angle, your mind and your body begins to play tricks on you. And you start to feel like the plane is doing things that it isn't. Your mind might feel like the plane is flying like this, but the panel in front of you is telling you that the plane is flying perfectly parallel with the ground. The danger comes when you trust your mind over the panel in front of you, because you adjust the aircraft in the wrong way, and in a violent storm, that can send easily the plane into a tailspin and, into the Hudson River. So we, after about an hour and a half of this, we decided that it would probably be a good time for an emergency landing. We couldn't fly below the clouds, we couldn't fly above the clouds. We decided we would try to make an emergency landing. But every time we did, the clouds would open up, and there would be a clearing, and we thought, well, we had beaten the storm. Of course, we hadn't, because the storm was traveling in the same direction we were. But we would decide that we could keep going and fly home. And, of course, we would get caught up in the storm again. After 3 hours of being tossed around every direction and me looking over to Chris, and every time Chris being white-knuckled on the controls of the airplane, saying really reassuring things to me like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. We eventually, thankfully, made it home. Saw the lights of the runway, coasted in, and it was, the longest descent ever. The storm had followed us, pouring rain in Rhode Island. We touched down, and Chris and I looked at each other in silence because the engine had just cut out. Apparently, planes need oil, and ours didn't have any. And after a couple of failed attempts to restart the plane on the runway, we made what was probably the only smart decision of the night, which was not leaving an abandoned plane on an active runway. And we took the only option that was in front of us, which was to get out of the plane in the pouring rain on an active runway and pull it with our own strength a half a mile to its parking spot. We never thought we would die that night, but we were pretty certain we would crash. And thankfully we didn't. We didn't crash that night, but the economy and the tech boom and the stock market all eventually and very shortly after did crash, and it took everything that Chris owned with it. His house, his job, his plane, took everything with it. And Chris, and of course, that wonderful lifestyle that I lived with Chris was was gone as well. Chris has since, you know, recovered financially and is doing fine, but neither of us have ever recovered from that night. We have never flown together since.
That's the stupid shit you would do if you've got a ton of money.
And you're in your mid-20s.
You buy a movie theater. You buy a plane and, don't really know how to fly the plane. I mean, you kind of do, but not really.
I know. I mean, it really, I feel like these stories were really instructive. Like, I prefer, like, I don't even, when I get on a plane, I don't want to see the pilot. Just want to hear them. No, I want to pretend that they're superhuman and like.
Do you get off if you hear it's a woman? Are you like, I'm sorry?
I just ask if she's on her period.
Where are you in your cycle, ma'am?
I just prefer not to have any personal identifying information about, you know, so I can just think it's like a machine, mm-hmm. you know. And as we know, machines are better than humans.
Yeah.
So.
AI would like you to believe.
Yes. Thank you so much for joining us today. Don't fly with friends. That's, I feel like we've pretty much proven that.
Well, you can fly with friends, but just maybe not with them at the helm.
Well, I've flown with you and
that's
somewhat of a nightmare. So I'm going to say don't fly with friends.
Full stop.
You can visit us at stoopstorytelling.com. To learn more about the Stoop, listen to stories, see our shows upcoming. We want to thank Maureen Harvey for producing the show, and we'll be back soon with more stories from the Stoop. Remember, don't fly with friends.